The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
If you feel like you're stuck in a rut, you can't be happy. It's time to take back the American dream. Welcome to No Plan B, creating multiple streams of residual income. Your host and guide on this journey is William Speak. Today, William and his guests will show you how to make residual income really work. It doesn't always have to be about working a 60-plus hour work week. Now, here is your host, William Speak.
Good morning, everybody. Nice Monday morning. It's a beautiful day here. Welcome to No Plan B, creating multiple streams of income. It's the first day of the week, an exciting time. I have the privilege today of doing my show from my hotel room in downtown St. John's, Newfoundland. I have a beautiful view of my window of the harbor, and that's part of my life. I get to travel and work and have a great time. First, I want to shout out to my friends here in Newfoundland. This is really like a second home to me, and thanks to the people here. So, you know, shout out to you. Today, I want to get right into the show because it's a fascinating show I have planned for us, and a guest who is a real trendsetter among entrepreneurs. So I just want to launch right into this and really get going. Want to give you a little bit of background. The topic for today is called the Generation Y Entrepreneur, otherwise known as the Millennial. And a bit of quick background on it, just the generations. The baby boom generation were the ones that were born between 1946 and 1966, and they are basically the big, huge wave of people that came after the war. Bill Clinton, the Beatles, are on the front end of the baby boomer, and the back end of the baby boomer would be Adam Sandler, Halle Berry, that age group right there, all considered to be baby boomers. Then shortly after that came Generation X, which were the downside of the baby boomers, because that was where the population started to decline. Barack Obama is a Generation X, and so am I. And we found that that generation had a difficult time because everybody ahead of us had the good jobs, good careers, and it was a bit of a struggle. Then along came the millennials, or the Generation Y, the group that we're going to be talking about today. Born about 1978 to the year 2000, they've been called the boomerang generation because they tend to spring back home with their parents a lot, or sometimes the me generation. But the good part about them is they're very techno savvy, they're innovative, and they find that the biggest opportunities will fall out of adversity. And my guest on the show today knows this to be true. So joining me on the line from Brooklyn, New York, social and millennial entrepreneur, Mickey Agrawal. Good morning, Mickey, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning to you, too. Hope you're enjoying your time. What's the weather like?
The weather's horrible, but that's Newfoundland. It just had a big snowstorm, and watching out the window as they're digging out. But
What's the food of choice in Newfoundland? What's the food? What's like the main? What's their like signature staple?
Well, we eat a lot of cod here.
Awesome.
And a lot of seafood. That's what it is.
I love it.
Yeah, so can you begin by just giving a description, sort of a comment on my description of the Generation Y, the millennials? What's your opinion or your experience with them?
I think we're at an age today where, you know, every single, you know, person, young and old, has access to more information than the president did 30 years ago. It was something that Elon Musk said at the Dell conference a couple of days ago that I was at. And it's so true. It's just that, you know, the millennial generation, you know, they have access. They can learn anything from Googling and YouTubing, anything from coding to learning how to play an instrument. I mean, it's remarkable what we have access to now. You know, I think there are certain things that I've realized, you know, as well, that because there's so much access to information, it's also a very noisy, you know, time where you're being advertised to in every possible direction, especially the millennials. And so the millennials have become really savvy, savvy consumers. And
yeah,
so as a result, you know, the world has to adapt and, you know, to really attract the millennial consumer. And I think a lot of it has to do, and what really interests the millennials today, in my opinion, is purpose. You know, having a mission behind a company will really get them to rally a lot more than just buying a product for the sake of buying a product. So
okay.
there's a lot of interesting, you know, facts about millennials, which is, you know, a generation that everyone's trying to get to.
Yeah, definitely. And just before we launch right into the meat of it, I just want to let everybody out there who's listening today the world over know who you are. First of all, your bio says you're a social entrepreneur, you're a restaurateur, a new author, a speaker, a former professional soccer player, named Forbes Top 20 Millennial on a Mission in 2013. That's how I first heard about you. At age 25, you opened a farm-to-table pizza alternative called Wild in New York City. You've partnered with Zappos.com CEO Tony Hsieh to open a second location in Las Vegas. You created Thinx, the underwear line for women on a period, and we'll talk more about that later on in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And also a media company, Super Sprouts, aimed at getting kids to eat more vegetables. And your book, which we're going to be talking more about today, is called Do Cool Shit. That was launched in August, and it hit number one on Amazon's bestseller list for entrepreneurs in just 3 days. I can also say on a personal note, Mickey's a fellow Canadian, born and raised in Montreal, yay, now living in Brooklyn, New York. And mm-hmm. the interesting part as well is her parents. Your parents met in my hometown of Ottawa. How cool is that?
So cool.
Yeah. So do you mind if I just launch in by saying, how old are you now?
My mom always said that after you hit age 30, you should only say you're in your early 30s. In my early 30s. I am my early
30s. Okay. I can say that too then. Yeah, I want to start going back just as you began, and it's very, very interesting that you had mentioned that the world is adapting to the millennials, and you, when you think about it, that's really true. When you see most companies have a Facebook presence, they have a Twitter account, they're,
mm-hmm.
they're out there so much, and it's apparent that that's a small generation, but it's a very powerful generation. Can you comment more on that?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's the most savvy generation that we have right now, and as a result, you know, the baby boomers, they're also, you know, trying to adapt to the quickness of the millennials. You know, the millennials grew up with computers at their fingertips from very, very young age, so they're so fast and they're able to get information so quickly, and so yeah, I mean, it's again, we're moving in a direction of information and. It's a matter of everyone responding and reacting to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's certainly a generation that has the power and the sexiness of high tech as well, because everybody does want to have the presence of that as well. Can you just give me a brief rundown of all of your businesses, all your ventures you have on the go right now?
Yeah, sure. So my restaurant concept is called Wild, and originally when I founded it, it was called Slice, but then this past year, since we opened in downtown Vegas, I had an opportunity after 8 years to really, you know, tie it all together and rebrand it under one beautiful umbrella of Wild. And it really stands for everything that I stand for, which is, you know, supporting local farms. There's perfection in the imperfection of food. And every tomato shouldn't look exactly the same. It shouldn't be manufactured. It should come from the wild. And it's already perfect in that way. So the restaurant opened, you know, in 2005 because, and I was, you know, 24, 25 at the time, so you can do the math now. And you know, I opened it because I had a stomachache all the time. Every time I came home, I had a stomachache, and I couldn't find a place that married both comfort food and health food, and that was both, you know, taste that satiated my appetite, and was, you know, lovely on my taste buds, but also was good for me. And so, you know, that marriage, I was like, wow, you know, there's my favorite comfort food was pizza, and I'd given it up at the time. And so I started looking at the pizza industry, discovered that it's a $32 billion industry. You know, Americans eat 100 acres of pizza every day. It was my two favorite statistics to give. And, you know, there was a real opportunity to take this beloved food and turn it on its head and use, you know, local ingredients, use organic and natural ingredients. Obviously have, you know, create a lot of local jobs as a result. And so, so open up, you know, now Wild, in 2005, and then now opened my second one in 2009 in the West Village, and then, opened one in Vegas in 2013. And this coming week, we're opening one in Williamsburg, which is really exciting.
Oh, cool.
So I've been working on that. This is my first one real quick, and then my second one, so from that, my twin sister, she, you know, was the creative director on the restaurant, and she had, you know, we were kind of discovering that kids weren't eating enough vegetables on their pizzas. They just kept ordering plain cheese pizza with no green stuff on their pizzas. And so we're like, how do we get kids to order, like, broccoli pizza? How do we get kids to order, you know, spinach on their pizza? What can we do to get them to order green stuff? And so my sister designed a menu that was a bunch of superhero characters, like Brian Broccoli, which is super strong because broccoli's good for your bones, or Erica Eggplant, which is super smart because Eggplant's a brain food, and Colby Carrot is super psych because carrots good for your eyes, and so you're learning a lot about these vegetable superheroes through their nutritional benefits. And so she drew these characters out and made this story and, you know, coloring book style at the restaurant, and all the kids wanted to be super strong like Brian Broccoli and be super smart like Erica Eggplant, and these have super sites like Colby Carrot, and they just kept running to the counter and ordering more vegetables on their pizzas, and it was working. It was directly translating into kids eating vegetables. And so she took that and basically created a whole children's media company, which I'm a partner of, and it's now, you know, now we have 14 products in the marketplace. We have, you know, four children's books. We have a bunch of Super Sprouts puppets. We do live puppet shows, and we reach 1 million kids a week now. With our TV show, which is really exciting. If you go to supersprouts.com, you can check it out. And for the restaurant, you can go to eatdrinkwild.com. You can check that out as well. And then from that, you know, as busy girls running around all day long, we just kept, you know, as women, you know, entrepreneurs, we just kept every month having an accident. You know, and we discovered that it was very, very natural for girls to, when they have their times a month, to you know, forget to sometimes change their tampon, change their pad, and have accidents in their underwear. And it was just such a normal, natural thing. But because people are so uncomfortable talking about it, you know, change never happened, and change never came from that. And there was no innovation in undergarments for women because no one talked about the very real and very normal things that happen to women every single month. And so, and then I went on a trip to Africa and met a young girl named Amale. And it was a weekday, and I asked her, why aren't you in school? And she said, it's my week of shame. And I discovered that, you know, she, along with, you know, 67 million girls in Africa alone and millions more around the world, miss a week of school every month because of their periods. And they use unimaginable things like sticks, leaves, mud, rags, bark, et cetera. And they start with missing a week of school and eventually get so far behind, they drop out of school. These millions of girls who drop out of school are actually, you know, they get pregnant early, they obviously earn less, and that's a huge thing. And they have also more likely to contract HIV and AIDS if they drop out of school early. It's a huge, huge, huge thing. Mm-hmm. And a productive girl in the developing world actually elevates the community much faster than a male would. It's proven. Three times more likely because they reinvest 90% of their income back into their communities, whereas only, you know, the males only reinvest 20-30% of their income back to their communities. It's a really, so it just goes to show that a productive, educated woman in the developing world can elevate women out of extreme poverty. So what we did was we invented and patented a pair of underwear that's sexy, that's breathable, that's washable, that's beautiful, that supports women here in the developed world, very much like the Toms model. So for every pair of underwear that you buy here, we fund the production of 7 washable, reusable cloth pads that goes back to a girl in a developing country so she can go back to school and work with dignity. And, you know, we partnered up with an organization called AfriPads that produces washable cloth pads in Uganda, made by Ugandan women, just actually creating local jobs. And so it really becomes a sustainable ecosystem. So, you know, again, it was a need. There was a need. You know, no one was meeting the need. There was a clear, you know, opportunity, and we now patented a pair of underwear, and we're literally, they shipped today, and we're receiving them in the next week after 3 years of hard work, and we're so excited to finally deliver them to our customers who've already pre-ordered. You know, we have 3,000 customers already pre-ordered our underwear, so we're so excited to finally give them their underwear next week.
Now, you weren't always an entrepreneur, and I remember when we last spoke and reading in your book, you had an aha moment that changed everything for you while you were working corporate finance on Wall Street. Can you tell us just a bit about your morning of 9/11?
Yeah. So when I graduated from Cornell University from upstate New York, and it was sort of a very natural thing for all, you know, graduates to move to New York City and get a job either on Wall Street or consulting, you know, that's a banker or a consultant, et cetera. And so my twin sister and I both got a job on Wall Street working in investment bank. And 8:45 in the morning, every single morning is my stop, subway stop, to go to my office. And that morning, you know, I'm the lightest sleeper on earth, and that was the first and only morning of my life that I've ever slept through my alarm clock. I've never slept through an alarm clock before in my life, and that was the only morning, and I was supposed to be there at 8:45 in the morning underneath Jewel Trade having breakfast with my girlfriend Laura at Jewel Trade Center, and I missed it. And she also missed it because she went to get coffee and missed, and she worked at Aon on the 99th floor, and, you know, hundreds of her coworkers, including her boss or all of her friends, died. Two people in my office died. It was a really, really insane time, and that was my big wake-up call to say, wow, like, isn't it time for me to pursue my passion and really, you know, that life is so short and it can really end tomorrow. And so, you know, what am I doing in a place that I don't want to be in? So I wrote down, you know, the things I wanted to do, and one of them was to start a business, the other one was to play soccer professionally, and then to make movies, and I did all three. So yeah, it's been quite the journey since.
Yeah, I could just imagine some sort of big life-altering moment like that stops you in your tracks, something as tragic as 9/11, and just
yeah.
reflect on what you're doing now versus what you want to be doing, living your dreams.
Yeah, the mystery of life is that really, right, you never know when it's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just sort of like we need to, like, make it count. So yeah, that definitely was a wake-up call for me, for sure.
Yeah, and in your book, as well as when you first started, you were talking a little bit about purpose. And when you read your book, your purpose is very clear to read. How important is it to having a strong purpose in life?
I think everybody wants and needs purpose. Otherwise, you're just like, you know, you don't know what you're here for, what you stand for. And, you know, I think a lot of times when older people get, you know, retire and get older, their purpose, they feel like, you know, they don't have a purpose, and it's very, very frustrating. And so, you know, I think for me, I will always, you know, work towards something until the day I die. I think the importance of purpose is the most important thing about purpose is that every day we're fighting through, you know, the ups and downs of starting a business, of growing a business, of you know, dealing with customers, dealing with employees, dealing with the day-to-day realities of running a business. And what gets us through all of it is purpose, is our mission behind it, is that, oh, my God, for every pair of underwear we sell, we get to help a girl go back to school. All of this effort, all of this, like, back and forth of creating this product that's really intense, that's first of its kind, you know, or owning a restaurant, which is, you know, on some level wonderful and on some level quite thankless. You know, there's a lot of things that happen every single day, and what gets us through is we're creating local jobs for the restaurant. We're creating a place, a gathering place that allows people to really deepen their relationships and to break bread in a healthy way. You know, I love having a restaurant that is a gathering space. I love owning a business that can make women not have to stop but can keep going because something, you know, as natural as their period through a very simple product. I love the idea of getting kids to eat healthier just through superpowered vegetable characters and through storytelling and the art, you know. And I love being able to give people the opportunity to start a business through writing my book. I mean, you know, my book, it's been an incredible journey to watch people quit their jobs and start their dream jobs or or to pursue their passions after they read the book. And so, you know, behind all of the effort that goes through each one of these businesses lies a very, very deep and very real purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and your book called Do Cool Shit, also subtitled Quit Your Day Job, Start Your Own Business and Live Happily Ever After. A really cool title. I also got from that, and when you call yourself a social entrepreneur, is that you're looking for a need in society and filling it versus this is what I'm good at, so I'm going to do it. Is that kind of more of your focus?
Yeah, I think, you know, the concept of the double bottom line, it's not just, you know, it's not just about profit, but it's about the community. It's about, like, how you're really helping the community, society as a whole, globally, like, what is your impact? And so it's like the return, you know, return on investment and return on, you know, what actually Tony Hsieh coins the return on community, ROC. And it's a really important piece because, again, that is the purpose. That is the mission. And, you know, again, as people are being advertised to and marketed to, and it's a really, really noisy world today, you know, what's going to make people to pull out their wallets and to purchase a lot? Actually, there was a study that came out, and it's like, you know, 60%+ of people would purchase a product based on its mission versus not, you know. So there's a real correlation between what people pull out of their wallets, but also as somebody who's working in it day in, day out, it could be very easily, it's not sexy, you know, as much as these industries, food, fashion, and film, and media all seem very sexy. On the day-to-day level, there's a lot of, you know, tough stuff. And so, again, for us, it's about the mission behind what we're doing. And for the consumer, it's like understanding that they're purchasing something that has a mission behind it. So everybody really wins.
That's fascinating. I also find that most people go through a whole bunch of their life, and then later on in life they get the heart of service. They see something that moves them. You've done it at a much younger age. Can you expand on that a little bit, please?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think everyone is on their own journey. Everyone's on their own path. You know, I and it's all beautiful, and all the stories deserve to be shared. I think, you know, I think on a business standpoint, like, you know, my book, for example, why, you know, who am I to write a book? I'm no Tony Hsieh. I'm no Richard Branson. But I think why people are relating to my book so much, and why people are continuing to spread it on their own without any advertising marketing, which I'm so grateful for, is because I'm very approachable, I'm relatable because I'm still on my way. I'm still, you know, finding things out every day. And so as they're reading the story, you know, they're like, okay, I can totally get to that girl. I mean, it's not a big deal. Getting to Richard Branson, Tony Hsieh level is kind of a lot for someone to wrap their heads around, but to get to starting a small business like a restaurant, or to following their passion and creating under a company, or to writing a book, these are all things people have dreams about, and they can do it. And I shared my story on exactly how I did it, step by step, moment to moment, so other people can kind of get some inspiration maybe on exactly what I did to make it happen. And I think, you know, I think when you read, you know, books out there, like the great autobiographies, they're wonderful reads and you're very inspired, but they don't leave you with tangible takeaways. So literally, what steps did you do? What did you say, Richard Branson, to make your first $1 million? What exactly did you do to get the New York Times to write about you when you were nobody for the first time? You know, those are very real questions people want to have answers to. And so for me, I was, you know, I really kind of, because it was so, it wasn't like 20 years ago, it happened like this, you know, all this stuff is happening as we're going. So I'm able to very clearly and very in real time talk about exactly what I did to sort of raise money or to get press or to do this, to do that, like real tangible stuff.
Yeah, and it is very tangible. When I read your book, that's one thing that stood out. It wasn't airy-fairy. It wasn't out there. You had very interesting chapters laid out how you did it. And at the very end, you had the takeaways, basically a checklist that somebody can just plug into and do. So I found that a very good, very refreshing, a good business book in that regard, and highly recommend people to read it. So your purpose, essentially, for writing the book was, you've done it so far, and you just wanted to tell people steps and how you did it.
Yeah, like so many of my friends, you know, over the last 8 years have been like, how did you raise money? How did you get press? How did you do this? How did you do that? And it just sort of like, let me just write a book because, you know, everyone wants to have the light turned on in their eyes. My boyfriend's mom, you know, said that to me, you know, when we first met. And her name is Sam Horn, and she wrote the book Pop, and she's like a, you know, very successful author and public speaker, Sam Horn. And, you know, the concept of turning the light on in your eyes, it's such an important thing. It's like, again, the whole concept of the mystery of life is that you never know when it's going to end. And so we might as well live life with the light turned on in our eyes. And so that's just a really important piece, I think. And I think if my book can give people the opportunity to do that, then I think I've really, you know, the book's doing its job.
Now, did you find the book was a bit of an expression for you? Did you learn something about yourself while you wrote the book?
Yeah, it was so funny because as entrepreneurs and as you know, we're running around all day, and every day you're just going for it, and you don't really have a lot of time to stop and reflect and understand and digest. And so the book writing process is really cathartic for me in a lot of ways because I was able to actually stop and reflect and digest and actually think about what my takeaways were and what I learned from all these experiences, which was a lot. And, you know, when you're going, you're kind of subliminally taking in all of your lessons and learning. But when you put it down on paper, it becomes very real. And then you get to really share those experiences with others, which then becomes very helpful for others, which is, you know, wonderful for me to see. So yeah, it was a very cathartic experience for me.
Oh, that's amazing. Want to talk more about your book. We're going to take a short commercial break right now, and then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more to you about the millennials. You're listening to No Plan B, Creating Multiple Streams of Income, and Mickey, coming up after the break, is going to talk about how and why this generation right now has the greatest opportunity, and I believe so, the greatest opportunity in history. Before you go, we go. If you have any questions or comments for Mickey now or after the show, you can email me, noplanz@williamspeak.com. That's S-P, Sierra Papa, Echo Alpha, Kilo Echo. Don't forget the E on the end. That's Speak with an E. On Twitter, @WSpeak. You can also call us right here. Call into the station. We'll try to get you on the air, on the line, talking to Mickey. The call-in number is 866-472-5790. We'll get you on the line. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Do you dream about owning your own business? Do you feel you have more to offer but just don't know how to get started? Are you passionate about life, helping others, and committed to taking your health to the next level? Come join our team. We offer solutions to transform lives in weight loss, energy, and performance. Discover how thousands of people have already transformed their lives. We will teach you everything you need to be successful in your own business. For more information, please visit stepintoliving.com or call 416-578-4485.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to No Plan B with William Speak. To reach the program today, please call us at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to noplanb@williamspeak.com. Now, back to the program.
I love that music. Just wants you, makes you want to get up and dance on such a nice day. And it's a Monday morning. We're back to No Plan B. My guest on the show today is Mickey Agrawal. She is a social entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. We've been talking a little bit about her book, Do Cool Shit. We've been talking about her businesses, which are completely chronicled in an amazing book, basically an autobiography of how she did it. I'd like to talk a little bit more now about the millennials and their generation. We were just talking a little bit at the break, and if anybody has any questions, give us a call, 866-472-5790. 5790. Now, Mickey, the millennials have been called a lot of bad names, bad things, lazy. They've been called purposeless, coddled, and just looking delusional. This is from a Time magazine article. How would you respond to that? What's been your experience?
Well, I mean, you know, I do think that, you know, the university education system is broken because, you know, they're not letting students who are graduating be fully equipped with the right tools they need to really enter the big bad world that we live in today, and especially the very different world that we live in today than we did in the 1930s or the 1800s when most of the college education programs were created around. And so, you know, definitely my experience with hiring millennials has been very interesting and also, you know, slightly frustrating in a lot of ways. You know, lack of understanding of proper spelling, grammatic grammar, of not being able to use commas, of not being able to, you know, these are all like very real things that because they're using autocorrect all day, they have spell check, they have access to like everything's on the computer. They don't know how to, they have no penmanship anymore. You know, it's just, it's fascinating to see a lot of those things go to the wayside. And it's true, you know, because they've been given most of the stuff in their lives by their millennial by their boomer parents who worked their butts off to give them everything they can because they probably are immigrants or whatever. Then, you know, the thick skin is not as developed. And so when they run into, you know, a problem, sometimes they're not able to really break through, you know, the hardship. And so I've had to go through a lot of interesting experiences with that. But on the other hand, again, the millennials have the most opportunity than anybody does because they have access to more than anyone's ever had. And they are knowledgeable and they are savvy and they are fast. And I believe that the best ones will be the saviors of our planet. You know, we'll, especially the women, the women millennials. So, you know, I really believe that, you know, we have an opportunity as, you know, I'm right on the cusp of the millennial generation to really coach and inspire, you know, the next millennials, you know, sort of the ones right behind me to really care about, you know, to really care about the importance of things like paying attention to detail, you know, the importance of detail. Because if you think about the way things were built back in the day, they were built so well. And today there's this concept called planned obsolescence where you're like, you want things to fall apart so you can make more and give and have people buy more. It's like, I want to retrain people and re-engage people to really, you know, if you're going to do something, you might as well do the absolute best job to your ability and do not leave one stone left unturned. And, you know, think about your punctuation. Think about it from, you know, what it looks like from close and what it looks like from far. And just, you know, and I think it's up to us to really retrain them and to not coddle them and to not give them everything they want and to say, no, you have to work, you have to earn your respect, you know, and that requires effort and time and more than just 1 week of work or 2 weeks of work. It's like, show me that you're actually here to stay and that you're going to put in the time and I will respect you for it. And with respect comes a lot of opportunity. So, you know, I think it's, you know, on one hand, if we just keep poo-pooing the millennials and saying they're lazy, it's not going to help, you know. And I think I've recognized that. I've recognized that in my own frustrations with, you know, the younger set of millennials who I've hired, even if I'm on the cusp of millennials on the other side. You know, I've recognized that it's not about getting frustrated and actually saying, oh, my God, like what you're doing is like not worthy of, you know, of my respect, but, you know, it's really going to be in the education and re-education and saying, hey, man, look at this again. Are you thinking critically? Look at it again. What is wrong with it? What's missing? What can be changed? What can be fixed? And giving a bit of a heavy hand because they've been coddled their whole lives and they don't, you know, and it's like, no, this is the real world is not as kind as your parents are, sweetheart, you know? And so it's like, having to really go through that, but then realizing that it's really in their re-education that they're going to win the most.
Yeah, and that's the downside of it. There's the upside of it. The opportunity right now for the millennials has never been greater, and that's my opinion. I did get that sense from your book as well. So can you speak a little bit to perhaps there might be some millennials out there listening right now. What sort of opportunities really do they have today?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? You can make – now there's like – social, you can become like a social community builder. You know, like there are so many new job descriptions out there and job titles out there that are so unique to this time that never existed before, like social media coordinator or community wrangler or, you know, things like that, where, I mean, absolutely did not exist, you know, many, many years ago, or just even many years ago, even like 5 years ago, these jobs didn't exist. So you really can make up a job if you show that there's value being, you know, brought from that. So if you become a social media coordinator and realize that customers are coming through those social media channels, then you betcha that job becomes important, right? So, you know, as much as there are a lot of things being automated today, there's also a ton of new innovative ways to have jobs for younger set. To become a programmer, to become a developer, to become a front-end designer. Now design and branding is becoming more and more important every single day for all companies. They're realizing that. Look at Apple. You know, why Apple is so successful? Because it's beautifully designed. And, you know, compared to other brands. And so understanding the importance of design, you know, understanding the importance of the aesthetic, that becomes a whole new job set for the younger generation, for the millennial, for the younger set. So
yeah.
As much as it seems like jobs are minimizing, there's opportunity. When it's about, again, the action to go seek them. And a lot of times millennials, because they've been given everything their whole life, they don't have that seeking, you know, that seeking mentality, or that, like, I'm going to go and find, make a job for myself or this person and become so indispensable that they're going to need to keep me, you know? And so it's like, I deserve to get a job because I graduated from college. Sorry, honey, that's not how it works today.
Yeah.
So it's like it's the seekers, the dreamers who actually, like, do work are the ones who are going to win.
Yeah. Now, you have an interesting chapter in your book, and it's called, I want to quote it, "What Sucks in Your World?" And you might think that it's kind of like barroom discussion at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Friday at 5, but that's actually an entrepreneur's dream, isn't it? Can you expand on that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, what sucks in your world? So you think about, like, you know, for me, when we opened up all our businesses, the restaurant, my stomach was hurting. So that sucked in my world. Having a tummy ache is the worst. And so to be able to create an environment where you can go and eat clean food that you know and love so well, like a slice of pizza, that's a win for me. And as a result, it's a win for others too. You know, 20% of Americans eat gluten-free now, even not because they're celiac, because they realize that eating gluten is actually a natural inflammatory, so it inflames your joints. If you have joint pain, you shouldn't be eating gluten. So I realized that after having knee surgeries. So anyway, so you know, for me, the first pain point was having a tummy ache to open the restaurant. Second pain point was realizing that 66% of Americans are obese and overweight, and that 33%, one-third of our children in this country are obese and overweight, and that is an alarming statistic, and it's only increasing unless somebody does something about it. So, you know, creating the Super Sprouts with, you know, for my twin sister writing these books and creating these products and actually developing it, I know really, you know, it's going to be a game changer for kids. You know, you develop your taste buds before the age of four for the most part. And so that was a pain point that you know, we're hoping to try to solve that sucked in the world. You know, the third thing is women who have issues every single month because there's no innovation undergarments for women. That's a giant pain point every single month. I've thrown away at least 2 pairs of underwear every single month. I've had accidents all the time. It's so annoying, and there's no innovation. And 2 billion women menstruate every single month, and there's no innovation. So it's about time there is. And so for us, you know, it was a very easy pain point to try and solve, even if it took us 3 years to do it, and a couple of patents. But, you know, very proudly so, we're solving a problem not only for women here, but for women around the world. Who have just don't even have access to basic necessities for that time of the month. And then the book, the pain point was people want to start their jobs. People want to start their passion project. People want to start their own businesses. You want to start pursuing whatever that turns a light on in their eyes, and they can't because they don't know how to start. And they also were in a failing is not an option, you know, or failing means you suck world. And to change that, like, no, if you fail, that's great. You're learning. You're learning so much. It's fail forward. Let's keep doing. Let's keep failing until you get it right. And so the book really talks a lot about that. It's about pursuing your passions, you messing up a lot, you kind of picking yourself back up, not looking back, not dwelling, just keep going. And I think, you know, again, like that was a very serious pain point that so many people, 70% of Americans hate their jobs and no one's doing anything about it. And so can we create just a very simple piece of literature through fun storytelling and self-deprecating storytelling that gets people saying, oh, my God, this chick whose father came to America with $5 in his pocket from India can do it. I can do it, too. So, you know, these are all, to me, very real, very simple and very easy pain points that we try to solve.
And there's a lot of resources, learning abilities for skills gap. If you don't know what to do, it's not at all there.
Well, the one thing that ties it all of those businesses together is that we knew nothing when we started about any of these businesses. We jumped in both feet first without any clue, and we just learned every day as we went. And we're learning as we go every single day. It's still a learning. I mean, I've been in the restaurant business for 8 years, and every day I'm like, oh, that made it easier. And you just kind of like have these realizations, epiphanies every single day if you seek them, you know.
Absolutely. What we're going to do right now, we're going to take a short commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to have Mickey talking a little bit about why are you too busy to live your dreams, and a little bit about her story on how she managed to fit everything into her life as well as being extremely busy. You don't have to miss, it's going to be coming up right soon, very soon. So for more information about today's show, upcoming shows and guests, be sure to visit my website, williamspeak.com. That's speak with an E on the end. You can like us on Facebook. That's William R. Speak. And if you have any questions or comments today for Mickey, give us a call right here at the radio station. The number is 866-472-5790. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Do you dream about owning your own business? Do you feel you have more to offer but just don't know how to get started? Are you passionate about life, helping others, and committed to taking your health to the next level? Come join our team. We offer solutions to transform lives in weight loss, energy, and performance. Discover how thousands of people have already transformed their lives. We will teach you everything you need to be successful in your own business. For more information, please visit stepintoliving.com or call 416-578-4485.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to No Plan B with William Speak. To reach the program today, please call us at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to noplanb@williamspeak.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to No Plan B. We're talking to Mickey Agrawal about the millennials, and we were just talking about the opportunity that's available now, basically unprecedented in history. Mickey, I want to begin by going back to the reference of your book, and I like the fact that you use the reference of MacGyver. I like that. You were working full-time, but you still managed to live one of your dreams, to fit that in, being a professional soccer player. Can you briefly tell us how you managed to MacGyver that?
Yes. So everyone's always like, oh, I can't do this. I work, you know, 100 hours a week or 80 hours a week. It's just like, no, if there is a will, there is a way, truly. And so, you know, I was working investment banking, 9/11 happened, and that's when I decided my first 3 months to play soccer professionally. And, you know, the New York Magic were holding tryouts in Brooklyn 2 to 3, 2 days a week and then once on the weekend. But that was like from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. It was in Brooklyn, and my office was in Midtown. And, you know, again, you know, the one way to look at it is like, oh, you know, I can't do it. I'm going to be at work. Or the other thing is like, how do I MacGyver this and make it work? And so, you know, what I did was I found, you know, the one person in the office who played soccer in college, and who really understood my dream. And I just, you know, asked him to be, you know, to be an ally for me to pursue my dream. And I said, look, I will get the job done. Whatever it is I have to do at work, I will come back after the tryout and make it happen. I will come back even if it's from 9 p.m. to midnight, 2 in the morning, whatever it takes. I will come back and do the work. Just give me the opportunity to try out and fulfill my dream. And of course, if you approach it that way, like you'll be heartless to say no. And as long as you get the job done, if you don't do your work and if you don't fulfill on that promise, then you will not be given the opportunity to do that. And so for me, it was a very, you know, I had to get the job done. It was an investment bank. It was a very important job, you know, in that world. And so I had to get the job done. So I, you know, befriended the doorman, because I used to sneak him food all the time, and befriended the car service guys outside who would drive people home late at night, and, you know, explained to them my dream as well, and they understood the dream. And they, you know, the guy behind the front desk held my soccer, you know, breakfast gear. And then I befriended the car service guy and asked him, hey, you know, would you be able to drive me to Brooklyn so I can have the tryout? And he drove me to Brooklyn twice a week for almost 2.5 months and sat there in the parking lot watching me try, or like, you know, just on the phone or whatever, waiting for me until my tryout was over, and then would drive me back to the office where I would finish working till like 2 a.m. twice a week, you know, for 2.5 months until the job was done. And again, you know, the tryouts, you know, these are top college athletes, you know, who are trying out, and they've been there since 4 p.m. like warming up. I was warming up in the car on my way to the, you know, to the practice or to the tryouts. And every practice they would eliminate people who weren't good. And so what I had to do was to immediately, I had to get the attention of the coach and, you know, make sure that he knew that I was a real contender. And so I got his attention just by walking up to him and saying stuff in Italian. And so again, like this is just a testament to, like, you know, if you do whatever it takes to stand out, if you do whatever it takes to get, you know, the attention of the person that's the decision maker who's going to become an ally for you, you have to make that happen, especially if you're at a disadvantage. For me, I'm tiny. I'm like 5'1", pushing. I tell everyone I'm 5'2" because 5'1½", but whatever. It's like you having to really give people, you know, what your strengths are immediately, so then they can look at you as a real contender. And I learned that I learned that then, and it helped me in making the team and making the starting lineup for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you MacGyvered an angel investor as well for your restaurant chain. Can you tell us that was an interesting story? Would you care to tell that to us too?
Which one?
Yeah. Well, you had a party. You invited people.
Right. Okay. Right. So I realized that, you know, when we're really excited about something and we tell our friend something, you know, our idea, you're super excited and you just get so pumped up about your idea. But the minute your idea gets put in front of somebody on a professional level, like say you're meeting an investor in quotes or someone who has money in their pockets, and you're trying to explain your idea, all of a sudden that excitement and that like power that you have behind your idea gets replaced with nervousness, with jitters, forgetting what you're trying to say, and just like, you know, and it's a very real feeling. It's like standing up on stage and versus like performing in your bathroom, right? So it's a very, very different feeling that you have. And so when I first started raising money, I was 24 years old. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know how to raise money. And I just started by doing like one-on-one, in quote, meetings and with anyone who had money in their pockets, with extra pocket change. And of course I sounded nervous. I didn't do a good job and I didn't raise any money that way. So I kind of sat down and reevaluated and said, okay, in what situation am I most me, where my excitement, my passion, my drive comes through and shows to investors too? And so back in 2004, 2005, I started hosting dinner parties, and I started hosting fundraising dinner parties because I grew up hosting parties my whole life, Japanese, Indian functions, back in Montreal, like all the time. And so I said, okay, I'm going to host these fundraising dinner parties, and I'm not going to present my own idea because I'm too nervous about it. So I had my friend with a British accent present my idea for me so that he can then sound really smart and I can just be there cheerleading people. I had a friend who was a chef who came and prepared the pizzas. I held in a really beautiful loft my friend lent me for the night. I had wine flowing. I hosted these dinner parties with anyone I thought had any money in their pockets, and that's how I raised the money. You know, it was really fascinating to watch because it then helped with positive peer pressure. Because people, you put on a really great event, and you look around, and people are like, are you investing? And they're like, yeah, I'll help her out. Look, she's like working so hard. Oh, yeah, I'll help her out. So all of a sudden, everyone's pulling out their pocketbooks because it's kind of positive peer pressure. Because one person is doing it, everyone wants to now be part of this community. It was a really incredibly interesting, you know, study, psychology study, to see how groupthink really worked in my favor. Yeah.
No. And it's a completely different way of doing it, but what you're
totally.
Doing is creating a business community, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're surrounding yourself
and again,
also
like, most
with
people like, oh, you know, hosting a fundraising dinner party. It's just like hosting a little party at your apartment or like finding someone with a really nice apartment. Anyone can do that. Anyone can gather people in a place and get and feed them free food. That's a very key thing. Come to this party with free food available. Who doesn't want to go to a free dinner? And then come and listen to a presentation. Of course you're going to do that. And in a really cool environment where you get to meet really other really cool people, all of a sudden you're not only investing in the idea, but you're investing in this new community that you're a part of.
Yeah.
So it was back in 2004 when now community is a big, you know, a buzzword. But back then, like, nobody was doing this. And it really worked for me as a 24-year-old with no experience in anything whatsoever, you know.
Right. We have a few minutes left before we have to say good day for now. But we're talking to entrepreneurs around the world right now. There's some people that are advanced. Some people are just beginning out. And everybody's at a different level. And your book has a lot of information, a lot of things to help people go. But if you had one tip, just one little tip that you could throw out there to anybody, a tip that might, you know, make a difference in somebody's day or somebody's week business-wise, what would you say?
Two things.
Okay.
One, the first is so important. It's to eliminate all of the negative relationships in your life. I have a term that I call in my book that says deplete equals delete. And this is not people who you think are just, like, talking shit about you. This is people who think that they're doing something that's right for you by saying, no, stay in your steady job. No, take the safe road. No, don't, you know, go off the beaten path. And those are people who are also naysayers of your passion project or what you're excited to do in your life. Again, the mystery of life is that you never know when it's going to end. You have to, you know, make it count. And doing that and by hanging out with people who are only safe is not going to help you in pursuing your passion. And so eliminating those negative relationships is step number one. And so once you eliminate these relationships, you'll make room for inspiring, creative, dynamic people, and you're going to be calling the people into your life who you want to be like, who you are seeking to you know, to collaborate with. And so that's such a big thing. People are like, oh, I've been friends with this person since college, and we get drunk on weekends, and we're like frat buddies and whatever. And like, you know, those aren't your friends anymore. You've elevated yourself from that.
We have about 30 seconds left, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I want to hear that last tip before we close.
And the second thing is just absolutely no matter what, never give up. Never, ever give up. It takes 10 years to be an overnight success. It doesn't happen overnight. You just simply cannot give up. Focus on the mission. Do whatever it takes. Just don't give up.
We've been talking today to Miki Agrawal. More information, you can go to her website, docoolshit.org, for more information there. And thank you so much, Miki. That's
absolutely
our show for today.
Thank you.
Tune in next week. No plan B. My topic is the goods on network marketing, what it is, what it isn't, and why it has been called the business of the 21st century. You're invited to join me back next Monday, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific, for another episode of No Plan B, Creating Multiple Streams of Income. I'm your host, William Speak. Thank you, and thank you again, Miki.
Thank you.
Thank you again for tuning in this week. No Plan B can be heard again next Monday at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Business Channel. William Speak personally invites you to join him for another show that will help you make money the fun way.